Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Forever Bristol City podcast. The final score at Ashton Gate on Wednesday night. It finished City 0, Ipswich Town 1. A spirited performance would be my outtake from the game, but I'm joined today by regulars Mark and Ian, and I'm delighted as well to have on board Dave Fevs. Morning, everybody. How are we feeling today? You first, Dave. Quick 30 seconds on how you saw it last night.
Morning, Dave. Morning, the other two too. I think spirit is probably a pretty good description, Dave. I think we gave it our all. We left everything on the pitch, and I don't think over the 90 there was a lot between the teams. And I think we could have easily, you know, come away with a point. I think Ipswich are a good side. They play some really nice stuff, but I think we gave them a lot of problems last night. And I think if we'd come away 1-1, I don't think it'd have been massively unfair. I think they had a better first half, but we certainly had a better second half, and we ended very, very strongly.
Okay. Ian, your take on the game? I guess it's going to be broadly similar, yeah?
Yeah, I thought we played about five times as well as we did against Coventry and came out with a defeat. And the reason for it, and the stats bear it out, is just a lack of quality in the final third. Too many rush passes, too many... under hit. Our passes either seem to be under hit or over hit. We just didn't seem to get it right. And we haven't got that creative player in midfield who's going to play the Brian Tinian type passes and play the clever little through balls. We just don't have that player in the squad. And our other problem is although we crossed almost three times as many balls as Ipswich last night, there was a lack of quality on most of them. So, I don't think we could have done any more with the players available to us. And that brings us nicely back to the injury crisis that no doubt we'll talk about later on.
We'll talk about that most definitely. Mark, your take on the game, and then I'll stick with you as well, about that Ipswich Town lineup. So your take on the game and that Ipswich Town lineup, they're up there with 12 games gone. So it's a credible period of the season to judge them. And, you know, only one defeat. But your thoughts on the game and their team selection?
I would agree with both Dave and Ian. City played far better than I expected after the Coventry game. We left everything on the pitch. The difference, we were playing an Ipswich Town side that was settled. Hardly any changes since the end of last season. Very comfortable on the ball, passed the ball well and supported the man on the ball and defended excellently. They're just very fine margins. They've got players who can shoot from distance. Sometimes we want to walk the ball in. And sometimes it's decision making in the final third of the pitch, as much as the finishing. You know, when you got a chance to shoot it goal, and the hesitancy kills the move stone dead. But that was probably one of the best performances from City this season, and they lost. It's just the injury problems are just so frustrating, because you can't expect to beat teams like that if you one of your best attacking players has to play right back and you're making changes all over the pitch every week. So it's becoming impossible, and with yet another injury we're really at breaking point at the moment, it's frustrating. But there you go. But we did everything we could.
Yeah, Dave, looking at our team selection, it does pick itself. I have to say, I think Sykes at right back, I thought going into the last international break, he had a couple of really poor games, in my opinion, for what that's worth. But I thought Sykes at right back, he's looking good there. He offers more of an attacking threat than George Tanner. And we know if fit, Ross McCrory would probably be first choice there. But talk about Sykes and the lineup. You agree with me, it picks itself just because of the paucity of the depth in the squad.
There's not a lot of other options out there, are there? And that's part of the problem at the moment. But yeah, I thought Sykes, I thought he played well against Coventry, I think, or should I say, I think most of the team played well after the opening 25 minutes, half an hour. I think we were all over the shop on Saturday, first half hours, and we shouldn't ignore that. But I think if you take the last hour and the 90 minutes last night, then yeah, Sykes has played well. I think he offered us quite a bit there, to be honest.
Would you have changed any of the front three at all, or not? Not really. He said, I think he said pre-match, I'm sticking with it at least 48 hours before the game.
I think there's, you could always say, yeah, I could, you could change players up. I probably would prefer if Vyman played in a more central role, but I don't think those options are available to us at the moment with who else we've got. I'd like to see maybe something different than Sam Bell at times as well, although, you know, he's done okay. But I thought there are too many games that Bell has where he's just not involved enough. And I think we need to just think about that. Who you bring in, you know, Mometi is the obvious answer there, but doesn't seem to be getting many minutes at the moment. No. So it's difficult. I think, you know, I don't think you'd sit here and say, well, yeah, if I'd have picked player X over player Y, then we'd have won the game last night. I think you know, our squad is generally, bar some, you know, a few exceptions, for quite of a level ability. And that was the intention, I guess, going into the season, was that we'd have a slightly deeper, more even squad rather than have, you know, I guess the two difference makers that we've lost over the last 10
months. A couple of superstars.
Semenyo and Scott.
Ian, you said before the game, let's quickly talk about injuries now, but, you know, it's now gone up to 10 with Andy King being taken off last night. And Dave's just said about Bell being not as effective as he might be. What's Mometi got to do to get in the team? Should they start Yeboah? But just look at the shape of the side and your comments on the injury crisis while we're at this point.
Like the shape of us up front, I think the 4-2-3-1 or the, I don't know, what is it, a 4-2-1-3 isn't working because we've got two guys out wide. Tommy Conway gets isolated. And I described it the other day as having Tommy up front without the service is a little bit like having a Rolls-Royce engine in a lawnmower. I don't think it isn't working. It doesn't look right. And Tommy's cutting a fairly frustrated figure. Would I bring in Yeboah? No, I wouldn't. Because I think, to be honest, he might be worth a try in his actual position, which once again is centre forward. Mm. He's not a right winger or a left winger. And you can see what Pearson thinks of Mometi last night, because when Roberts was injured and he took Roberts off, so that's potentially 11 if he doesn't recover for Saturday. He didn't bring Mometi on, even though we were chasing the game. He brought a young left-sided defender on. So I really don't know. I think Mometi was going to be the maverick, the difference maker that he said he wanted. The last few times I've seen him, he seems to have completely lost confidence and be a worse player than when he arrived.
Yeah. So I mean, he's got to fall very quickly into the category of Sammy Smodic, Mo Issa and Adilucken, isn't it? I mean, it's spending that 750 grand to £1 million and hope it works. And in those two cases, well, Smodic is tearing up trees for Blackburn at the moment, but we can't afford to be. We seem as though instead of spending £2 million, and that's the budget, we're £2 million on one player, and that's evidence with somebody like Jason Knight. We still spending £1 million here and there. Now, saying that, last night I thought Cornick, I thought he made a difference, as he did when he came on against Coventry, closing them down. But, you know, it's Mometi has to be classified as a failure now, Ian, doesn't he? Just because the manager.
I don't think you can classify the kid as a failure. It may be that we can't get the best out of him. There's obviously a player in there, but it may be that we can't get the best out of him. I don't know. I mean, I'm not close enough to it. I don't see the kid train, but he's on the bench every week, probably out of necessity, I would say. Roberts is another one who hasn't looked great when he's come on. And there was a lot of talk last night about, oh, he's taking him off. And you know, it's a terrible thing. But when they asked Pearson, he said, well, he was injured. He was limping. So I took him off. But once again, Mometi didn't come on. So I'd look at doing something different, like having a front two. And the only way you do that is leave out. I personally, at the moment, I'd leave out Andy Vyman and use Knight slightly wider. I think you probably got to stick with Sam Bell on the left. I don't know who else we've got. And play, if he's fit, play Naki Wells, because Pearson said he's the closest.
He's not going to be fit this weekend. So
Wait a minute. Pearson said, when he's been interviewed, Naki's the closest one to being back for the Cardiff game. Right? Okay. That means he's going to play.
I didn't hear that point. So if he's back, then
let me finish and I'll shut up then. If he's fit, he plays up front with Tommy or Harry Cornick, if he wants to start Cornick and bring Tommy on from the bench. But I think we need that all of our forwards, our centre forwards, if you will, are better in a two than a one, okay. I think. So give him a chance in a two. You can't do any worse than lose, can you?
No, true. Dave, what was your point? Then I'll come to you next
month. I think it's just only a very quick point on Mometi, in that I think when he signed, Sam Bell hadn't emerged, had he? Sam Bell was probably just making his...
Well, it was that Swansea game, Sam Bell, wasn't it, Dave?
Yeah, very early games, left side midfield. I think in some ways that shaped the way it is. I think there was a thought that Mometi might play central as well. But the kind of emergence of the 4-2-1-3 or 4-1-2-3, depending on who were playing in midfield towards the end of last season, and Bell's form, which has generally been okay, even if I don't think he contributes enough during games, you can see why he's ahead of Mometi at the moment. But I think Mometi is probably one of those players who needs some games, and that's the difficulty at the moment.
All right, let's get into the action. Mark, coming to you. I mean, we had a bright start, didn't we? Because Sam cut in with a shot. Tommy Conway had a header that, you know, he headed it straight at the goalkeeper. But it was a bright start by City before Ipswich got into their stride, wasn't it?
Yeah, before that, I remember Cam Pring cutting on the left. You didn't see this on the highlights. Had a four-sided goal and decided to cross it with the goalkeeper in front of him. Mark Sykes did brilliantly. I think that's the most I've seen our full-backs attack in a game this season. It was great. We were prepared to go full throttle at times. Sometimes that leaves you open at the back. But Sykes, you know, cut back and put in a great cross to Conway, who probably was right on top of the ball, couldn't generate any power. But that was a fantastic chance. If he heads it either side of the goalkeeper, he's forced into a save, but it was a comfortable save from Vlatky, and that was quite comfortable. Sam Bell's cut in from the left onto his right foot, but it's a grass cutter. You know, he's made space, but there's no power behind that shot, and it's straight down the goalkeeper's throat. But yeah, we started brightly. Good open game. So things look promising.
Yeah, but we let them get back into it, didn't we, Mark? And, you know, before we talk to each of you about the goal, but just before that, Chaplin put in a shot that was adequately saved by Max. But then from Luongo, that was a showboat save, wasn't it, when he touched it around the post? Yeah, it was good. It was going in the net.
Well, I wouldn't say it was a showboat save. What he did was he got very strong hands to it and pushed it out of the way. I mean, if a showboat save would be probably doing what Basso used to do, fling himself to the right, save the ball, go down, and then smile at the cameras. It was nothing like that at all. It was just good, strong hands to push it as far away from the goal as possible, because you don't want a player following in and hitting it into an empty net. So that was good. But do you want to come on to the goal and I can give you my take on that?
Come on to the goal, give your take on the goal, then I'll come to each of you in turn on that. But over to you first, Mark. Go on, Carol.
Yeah, we got about three players on the sides. Luongo's flicked the ball to Hurst. Hurst, I think he's got Sykes behind him and plays what you might term textbook as a wall pass. He plays the ball back to Nathan Broadhead, who's got so much space. Jason Knight is tracking back so slowly, but there's this huge space between Jason Knight. And if you watch it on the highlights, you'll see Taylor Garner-Hickman in the other place, but Knight gives him no cover. There's this huge hole for Broadhead to run into. He hits a crisp shot. I thought it went that O'Leary, from memory, just rocked back on his heels, but he's hit it through him. It's a very good shot, something we don't see our players do enough, hit right through the ball. It's got pace and just beats him at the near post, a bit near the middle of the goal, but it's an excellent finish. Poor defending, yeah, though. Very poor defending.
Mark's calling it an excellent finish, but Max was getting absolute pelters on social media last night. And why I mentioned that save beforehand, because at this level, you know, you're going to have a championship goalkeeper that's going to do some good saves, but is prone to do one like that. I mean, how did you see the goal? And do you pin it on Phillips? You know, because that was a difference between the two sides at the end of the
day. O'Leary, you mean?
Phillips in my notes. My God. You know, I wrote Phillips down. That's the sort of thing that Flapper Phillips would do.
Oh, I saw. I thought you were looking at... You're not looking at your electric razor, are you, Dave?
I'd actually written Phillips. Why have I got Steve Phillips? Why is he
featured? It's like we're at 2005 all again.
All days don't come alone.
I don't think anyone's going to sit here and say you expect the keeper to save them. I think as an explanation and not an excuse, if anyone's watched much of Nathan Broadhead, they'll see that the way he strikes the ball, it reminds me a bit of Batistuta. He's one of those people who can generate a lot of power from a very quick or short back lift. And I think that's what does O'Leary, because he actually doesn't get set. And we're talking, you know, fractions of seconds here, aren't we, in terms of another player. You see the foot go back, you position yourself, and it just, you just hit it too. He almost kind of hit it a bit like a topspin. It dipped it a little bit in front of O'Leary. Yeah, he should have saved it. I'm not going to sit here and suddenly reevaluate what I think of Max O'Leary as a goalkeeper on one event over a season, because I think generally he's performed more than adequately for us. Yeah, it should save it, but he didn't, and that's the goal that cost us the, you know, I'm not going to say it cost us the match. It didn't. It was the deciding moment in the game.
Yeah, a game of fine margins. Ian, you know, Mark alluded to the amount of space that he had, and you could argue two of our better players involved there. I mean, again,
I can't add anything to what Mark said. I thought he was spot on, and I thought Max should have saved it. Simple as that.
Yeah. And the builder, I mean, Hurst, that was a player that was sort of, I say, linked to us. He's that big striker mold. Who did they sign him from?
Leicester. Yeah, he was at Leicester. I think he's David Hurst's son, isn't he? The ex-Sheffield Wednesday player. But he's a strong centre forward who leads the line very well. He gave Rob Dickey and Cameron Pring Andy King and Rob Dickey, real problems last night, and Pring had to contain him when he came inside Pring's pace. But yeah, he with a 4-2-3-1, that's the sort of player you want there, who can hold on to the ball with his back to goal, and then you bring those three players in. That was why they were so effective. He's a great leader of the line.
Ian, if we got out and got a player like Hurst with Tommy Conway alongside and Vyman or Bell,
well,
then that starts to look decent, doesn't it? Because it's something different.
You're talking to me, yeah?
Yeah, still to you, Ian, yeah.
Hurst is what we haven't got, because he's not just a head on the stick, he's a footballer as well. And at the start of the season, not just me, lots and lots of people on social media and some of the comments we've had on there were saying, the three players we were short of, and then we thought we'd bring in once we sold Alex Scott, was a centre forward, the one that was different from what we've got, a creative midfield player, and another centre back. Those were the three most popular choices of player, I would say. And we haven't got any of those. Well, we've got them,
You didn't have to break the bank. You could have done, and this is a point Dave and I have talked offline about this, if they'd have gone out and spent 6 million, ignore wages, because the wages these days, we got all the high earners off. If we'd have bought 3 2-million-pound players for each of those positions, everybody would have been happy, wouldn't they? Well, the fan base would have
thought. They would, but we didn't. We may not need to buy them. We could have loaned some of them. And that's something else that, all right, I know Taylor Gardner-Hickman's a loan, but the deal's done and we're going to buy him at the end of the season, it looks like. So The problem is, if you have, you can go with the two smaller guys up front, right? But we could have Lionel Messi up front. It wouldn't make much difference because we don't give them the ball. And if you look at our service, I'll give you an example. This is from last night. Now, unusually for us, we pass the ball forward. I'll just find it a sec. We pass the ball forward more than they did, which is unusual for us. We don't. But when it comes down to a really, we cross the ball more than they did. But when it comes down to a really meaningful stat for me, is touches in the opposition box. And they had twice as many as us.
All right. And Dave, let me come to
that's the issue.
Dave, you're a numbers person.
Give service to people.
You gave a very good critique of our last review and what have you, that, you know, we might make comments about certain players and individuals, but Ian's just given us some numbers there. They're facts, right? You know, more crosses than them, more forward passes than them, but fewer touches in the box. That doesn't correlate in my thinking, but then what's your take on that?
I think you need to dissect it further and look at what touches there were in the box. If there was a criticism for me last night, was although we defended well, we didn't clear our lines. And I think that there must have been first half what I'd call kind of like four or five scrambles in the box. You know, I don't know. How many touches in the box were at Arian? Did Ipswich have, and how many did City have?
We had 16 and they had 31.
Yeah. I bet you could probably put a dozen of those touches down into three or four scrambles. So you're getting multiple touches rather than multiple attacks per se. So I think there's
Was that because they got more bodies in the box, Dave? They seem to have,
some of that, I think, Mark. But I think the number of clearances we hit straight to people, I think there was, I think it was Andy King kind of completely missed it, a half volley clearance.
He stumbled over the ball, didn't he, in the first half? Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's always things like that. You know, you could, you know, just looking at Y Scout just then, we actually won the XG last night. We actually had, according to Y Scout, 1.02, and they had 0.96. You know, I'm not, you know, splitting hairs on that, and I don't like using XG as that dictates what the result should be, because once again, just going back to kind of goal mouth scrambles, you could have three 0.5 chances all happen within like 5 seconds of each other. Well, you can't score more than one goal, can you? So we have to kind of temper that a little bit. I think they're a really good side, and I think that's what we should be focusing on.
No, that's it. It was a good game. I mean, it was one of the Ipswich fans.
It was a good game of football.
On here, it's an enjoyable game. Two good footballing teams, and that's what Leeds said about us when we were up there the other day. And he said we had to dig deep in those last 10 to 15 minutes and grind it out.
They were on their arses.
I know Bell and Conway aren't getting the service, but I feel they need to do better. Bell making runs alongside defenders and Conway struggling to hold it up needs improving. And Ross Edwards has said, we've been mediocre for decades. When was the last time we had a top manager? I don't think we have. Ian's right. You can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Mark, let me just come to you on the final two incidents I've got noted on the first half. I thought Taylor Gardner-Hickman, tidy performance from him in midfield. And he put in a shot. He looked like he'd overdone it right at the end of the first half, and the keeper tipped it over. But your thoughts on Taylor?
I thought Taylor's a great passer of the ball, and that's why he's in central midfield. He's very good at picking players out. I hope, you know, he finds his position there, and he's not the utility player that's going to play all over the place. But yeah, he's coming from the left-hand side. He's taken three players out. There's a fourth player on the left side of their area, and he hits the ball early. It's climbing, loses power as it goes to the top left-hand corner, and Vladke makes a decent save. I wouldn't say it was a top-class save. Gets his hand. He's going in the top corner and flicks it over. But yeah, that was our best chance of the night. Apart from Conway's soft header. So yeah, great from Hickman, and I think he's a quality passer of the ball and somebody I hope will feature regularly in central midfield. I think he can tackle, and I think he can play better than Joe Williams, so hopefully he'll be a regular fixture now.
Yeah, I agree with that. Ian Morsi, just before the interval, Max, not Phillips, rooted to his line as the ball thundered off the post. I mean, Morsi and is it Connor Chaplin? They're two players that would walk into our side and possibly make that difference to us. Would you agree with that, Ian? And that was a cracking shot, wasn't it? Again, too much space, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit like if you took the first 25 minutes of Coventry, how good did they look when they had so much space in time and we let them play? As soon as Jason Knight came on the field, and we switched to a formation that we could actually play, they didn't look so hot. And they got beat last night by Rotherham 2-0. So it's a question of, excellent shot, struck it brilliantly. Unlucky not to score, and you wouldn't say if it had been in the top corner, you wouldn't have saved that with two goalkeepers. So, yeah, one of those things. Coventry at the Woodwork three times on Saturday. It's okay saying, well, they only had one shot on target, but in fairness to them, they did hit the Woodwork three times as well, and could have been three or four up in that first 25 minutes. So, I thought, but then again, you come back to Sam Morsy, and you Egyptian. You look at his career.
Was he ex-part? Did they sign him from Barnsley?
Was Wigan, no, they, I think, wasn't it?
Morsy. I think they.
Where did Wigan come from, Dave?
Wigan, I think. Wigan.
Yeah, I mean, he's 32 years old now. He's not a young player, but he's a solid central midfield player. He's played around League One and the Championship, and is a dependable player. He was there last season as well. So you know they've got a very settled squad, but yeah, I mean, you looked at some, you know, the last few games in the Championship, you've got to take half chances, haven't you? You look at the Stoke and Birmingham goals with those headers that came straight back and are whacked in against Plymouth. It 2-0 up, they get a half chance on the edge of the area. And, you know, Sheaf for Coventry and Godden, those can go in. Because you know you've got well drilled defences, you've got to take your half chances. It's not the clear cut ones; it's the half chances like that win games a lot of the time. Yeah. So you need that. You need that in your locker, and we haven't got anybody that can strike the ball like that, I don't think.
No. Wish we had the Alan Walsh when he used to stride through and just belt it. Those daisy cutters. Okay, Dave. Into the second half, they're attacking. I really can't stand seeing 3,000 away fans behind one goal, because they really, I thought they made quite a bit of noise last night, more than Coventry, to be honest, although some people said not. And we were quite subdued, I thought, our fans. But right at the start of the second half, again, Max has been getting pelters for letting the ball go through him. But after King stumbled, Davis got through. That was a good save by Max, wasn't it? He got down to his left and touched it around the post. Yeah, that could have been 2-0 easily, couldn't it?
Yeah, it was a really good save. Strong hand kind of shot that's dipping on him again. But just that probably extra split second to be able to get himself positioned. It was a really good save. I guess a pretty crucial save, or we hoped it would be a crucial save.
And we were still in it. Yeah. We're still in it. Ian, how did you rate Tommy's performance last night? And he had a shot. This is the start of the second half. He had a shot saved. Then he was brought down. Well, it must have been a foot outside the box. But Tommy's performance, and then a well struck free kick from him, I thought.
Tommy's performance, no service. He's not a back to goal striker. And we have got this terrible habit of lumping the ball forward in the air. Now, that's okay if you're chipping it over the top or you're playing a through ball, but we aren't. They're just, for want of a better word, punts. So Tommy isn't getting the service. I don't think that the one role, being the one in a 4-2-3-1, suits his game. He'd be better off if Naki was playing next to him, or Harry Cornick. And I think I'd say the same for all our strikers. They're better in a two than a one, and we've got to find some way of being able to do that. Now, we know it's not 3-5-2 with the current personnel. We could probably play that formation if we had a fully fit squad, and the fully fit squad is never going to happen. That's a known risk, because it's been that way for the last three or four seasons. So on that basis, the back four seems to suit us. Having three in midfield seems to suit us, but we need to find a way of playing with two strikers, because what happens is all of our forwards, when they get the ball, get isolated because they're not getting the ball played in behind so they can utilise their pace. One thing they can all do is run. When we've got Sykes on the right and he's not playing right back, You know, we've got Bell, who's quickish. We've got Tommy, who's quickish. But with Tommy, he's got good movement as well. But you need somebody in midfield who can find him when he makes
the pick a pass, I think, is the term, isn't it? Yeah, but
yeah. Well, you need somebody with that, what they, you know, spatial awareness or whatever they call it these days. But he's got that movement. He's got that degree. A lot of the lads that come through the academy have got that because they're coached to move that way at a very young age. But you still need someone to give them the ball. And if you've got somebody like, for example, Naismith in midfield, he can do that. Not always, but on occasions. Now, we haven't really got anybody else who can give them the ball, on the ball, facing goal with a right amount of space. So I think until we change that basic concept, I can't see where a huge improvement is coming from. I hope I'm wrong, but I just can't see it.
Okay. Dave, the substitutions coming with 20 minutes remaining, I thought they were well-timed and they contributed to a very strong finish for us, and they were the obvious ones to make, really. Cornick and Yeboah coming on for Vyman and Bell. Now, I was told the other day that I was effing clueless, describing Andy Vyman as an out-of-control speedboat who just waves and points his arms all over the place. The out-of-control speedboat. Chris Honor, I thank for that one, and I think it's quite apt. I thought he had an abysmal game last night, myself. Cornick and Yeboah came on. What did you think of Andy's performance and, you know, the substitutions and those players' contribution?
I think Vyman did have a poor game last night, but I think going back to my comments on Max, what we should be doing is absolutely fine to evaluate someone's one game performance, but let's not then tar the whole of his time with Bristol City by one performance, because Andy Vyman's been a really good player for us. And I think Chris, you know, is good at championing phrases that are probably a bit unfair, to be honest. You know, yeah. You know, people talk about Andy Vyman running around a lot and doing nothing. Well, he doesn't do that, does he? He runs around a lot for purpose and you know, and to create space for others. And to just say he runs around is a poor comment to make. You know, I think Chris was the guy who did the busted trampoline for Famara Jiju. You know, and I think these kind of things stick, and therefore it builds bias in people's opinions about Andy Vyman. You know, Andy Vyman scored 50 goals for us.
Yes, his next goal I think is his 50th in 200 appearances. Yeah, so if you take,
but you know, he's played 200 games for us. He hadn't played, you know, people say, oh, he's only scored one in four, that's rubbish. Well, he's not played as a striker, has he, for more than about 60 or 70 games out of that.
Yeah.
He's played as a secondary striker, he's played right wing, he's played right wing back. So I think, you know, let's not tar Andy Vyman's whole career over one performance last night.
Look, he's a bit of a whipping boy, and look, we all have our, you know, comments like that. Yeah, come to you next year. And comments like that are shock jock type comments from that perspective. I mean, 200 appearances, 50 goals. You know, if you take out almost half those goals came in one season, he's not captured that form of 21, 22. And I don't think he ever will again. And
but that's because of that's because of a specific way.
I know, because he was part of WSM that was a striking, he was played in a trio that played as a unit, which as others, Ian and in particular, has just said on here, we don't play as a unit up front. But all right, he's out of contract in the summer, Dave, isn't he, Andy Vyman?
Yeah. Yes, supposedly. I can't remember who said something. Someone said he might have actually triggered an extra year during the 21-22 season.
Your take, you had your hand up just then.
Well, it's where he plays. I mean, a point that Dave made, I mean, I've seen Andy Vyman play right wing back, left wing back. His best position was a 10, more or less, behind Martin and Semenyo. And they're both gone. We haven't got a player like Semenyo with the strength and the power that can come in from the wide areas that can turn players. We haven't got that player. Tommy's certainly not that player. He's a good player, but he's different. Andy Vyman had a great season for us, and you don't get all those goals and all those assists in one season if you can't play and if you're just running around. But that's when he's good. When he's bad, he does do the arm waving in the pointing. You know, I screamed at him a few times on Saturday, don't wave your arms, just go and mark the bloke. And he's you know, a bit like the cop directing traffic. If and that's the downside of his game. But I still think if he's being played in that flat three, I'll call it, or last night was more of a right wing-ish type of position, that's not his best position.
Play him down the middle, and that's where he was.
This is what happens when you've got so many injuries. And I mean, if you look at the injuries, just to bring it into the conversation, Pearson, when he was talking about his back four, he was looking at McCrory as a right back, Zach Viner as the right centre back, then you've got Rob Atkinson possibly as a left centre back, and Cam Pring. Well, three of them couldn't play last night. So you had Andy King, who's played in midfield the vast majority of his career, out of position. Cam Pring finished up out of position. It's already saying, well, he can play there. His best position is left back, right? And he can play there. So this is, and Vyman on the right is the same. It's that type of thing that you get when you can't keep your players fit. For whatever reason, I don't profess to understand it or have a solution, apart from having a slightly bigger squad. And it's that difficulty that you get. So what you do get, and this has been a criticism in the past, the square pegs in round holes argument.
Okay.
But I still think it's down to the players around him, because if you'd have taken any of us as very, very average players and put us into the very best Barcelona side for 10 minutes, we'd have looked all right, because they're brilliant, brilliant players all around you.
Yeah.
We haven't got that, and Andy hasn't got that at the moment, and neither of the other players as well. So we're getting by as best we can with
what we're getting by. I think that's the only thing
open to us is free agents.
Yeah.
That's the only thing we can bring.
Just a bit of context on Andy Vyman's numbers, because as you say, it's 1-4. But if you take out the season when he scored all those goals, right?
But why would you do that?
Huh? No, I'm just saying, looking overall, because that season when he scored all those goals was his golden boot season in his whole career. Because if you take that season out, the other 160 games that he's played for Bristol City have yielded 25 goals. That's 1-7, as near as damn it. So he was great that season, right? But that was a one-off for him. You know, we can't talk about the past. We've got to talk about the present and the future. Mark, just to wrap up the action on Wednesday night, Harry Cornick, he's got a lot of critics on here. I mean, I don't think we've been... People say we've beaten up Andy Vyman. I don't think we've been massively critical of Harry Cornick. And I thought he had a cracking 20 minutes or 26 with the time added on. And that shot of his that hit the post, hit the keeper's back before being cleared by Brandon Williams, lone player from Manchester United. That was we were worthy of, if that had gone in, we'd have been worthy of the point. But what did you think of Harry last night?
I think it was a great substitute appearance. And I think the thing with Harry is, can he do that for the whole game? The only game I can remember him playing a whole match where he was effective was against Middlesbrough and Bank Holiday 2-2 draw at Ashton Gate last season. But he was excellent when he came on, harried defenders, and he's won that ball in their area. And he's going away from goal, so he's turned and hit it with his left foot as best he can. It's hit the base of it's hit the post, hit the back of Vladky, and it's just rolled agonisingly along the line, and it's cleared out.
The last time I saw a ball roll along a line like that, it was that same end of the ground. It was Alan Walsh against Forest in the 1989 League Cup semi-final. I think all of us were there.
Well, it was like that. Yeah, that was different. That pitch was like the memorial stadium. It was like a glue plot. This one, I mean, Tommy's running in, but the defenders got there first. I think Yeboah slightly to the left to try and get it, but it's cleared away from him. And you listen to the summary, and Chris Honor sounds like he's in pain when he's coming on. But when Cornet came on, that was an excellent, you could say, a cameo role. Can he do that for the whole game? Well, but I think he's the best we've got, I think, who could lead the line. The only problem is I wonder about his ability to hold the ball up. I think we'd be better off with a 4-3-1-2, him and Tommy, with somebody in behind, even if it was Andy. If we, I don't know if we go the whole hog and do that. Andy playing in a three behind, he's much better down the middle, arriving late, and he's a finisher. The reason he scored so many goals in that season, two seasons ago, fox in the box, and he's a finisher. He's just nowhere near the action. You know, he's outside the door all the time. He's nowhere near. Yeah. He's so isolated. He doesn't get involved. But that season, he was scoring all those goals. He was arriving late on the ball, and he's a finisher. That was the beauty of Andy Vyman. But yeah, I'd play Cornick in a two. I think with Conway, it would benefit them both. Then,
right.
But would Nigel want to do that? I don't know. He might, well, you know, he seems to prefer to have two midfield players in front of the back four, effectively having six defenders when we're defending. I suppose. So yeah. One of those two goes forward, probably being Taylor Garner Hickman. So I don't know, but that would be that I would do that. Nigel probably wouldn't.
Dave, the shot, it was unfortunate. And so the ball rolled along the line. The other guy who came on a sub, Ephraim Yeboah, he wouldn't be anywhere near the first team had we not got the injury crisis. He's getting a lot of minutes out there. And the one thing I noticed about him is that he's very quickly to press on players. He made them think about what they were doing. He gives away silly fouls, a bit like Antoine Semenyo when he came there. And he just needs to calm it down a little bit. But what did you think of Yeboah last night?
I don't have much more to add than what you said. He's 17 and he's raw, and he's learning his game in the harshest environment out there, first team football in the Championship. And I think it's, as you say, he's getting minutes because of, you know, we're struggling with injuries. And we've probably got some players who perhaps we thought would have started over him or played ahead of him, like Mehmet Ayouz, for whatever reason, isn't getting his opportunity. I just want to just go back on Mark's comment as well. I'm, and I guess Ian's earlier as well. I like strike pairings. I think Nigel Pearson's, you know, has said in the past, he likes playing two up top with one in behind. And I think what Mark suggests, the 4-3-1-2 is, you know, and this is not a criticism, Mark, at all, because it's probably something I'd say as well. It's the football manager solution, in that we stick magnetic blobs on a board, and, you know, and that's what we end up with. And but I think the other side to that is how does that work when we haven't got the ball? And how does, you know, if we're typically playing against teams that are playing back four, how do our front two split their four? And we saw last night, even with, you know, a front three, we still can't press enough to stop teams, not necessarily playing out, because I think we did an adequate job of it, but we saw on Saturday against Coventry that with your two central, the easy bit was for their, and they played a back three, Coventry, was for their side centre-backs to advance the ball or at least get outside of our strikers and then have easy passes into the wing-backs. So it's pros and cons of all of these things. As you'll know, I'm not a believer that formations solve problems. They can do, but I don't think they're a be-all and end-all. And I think we're suffering at the moment from lack of players and lack of players to be able to start well and change games as well. You know, he's quite limited in what he's got, and I guess we might come on to this in a minute about why that is.
Yeah, Ian, let's roll it on, and we want to wrap up inside the next inside 10 minutes. Rolling on to Cardiff, yeah, seven side derby. You know, they got a thumping 4-0 win at Huddersfield on Tuesday night, I think it was. So they've had an extra day to recover. I mean, We don't know what the lineup's going to be because we don't know if Andy King's fit. But, you know, Cardiff, it's not going to be easy over there on Saturday, is it? They're on a bit of form at the moment.
They won 4-0 the other night, Huddersfield. They've got a lively front four that we've had problems with in the past. Not when they were at Cardiff, I hasten to add, but when they've been with other teams.
That's that Mate you're referring to particularly, isn't it?
The Reading. Up front. But it's what I'd do personally, if let's assume Andy King's not going to make it, I give a debut at centre-back to Jamie Knight-Lebel on the right, shift Rob Dickey to the left, play Cambring in his best position, let Mark Sykes continue it right back. I don't see we've got much of an alternative. I mean, Harry Leeson would have been an alternative, but he's gone out on loan. You can't change much in midfield with James Gardner-Hickman. I play Knight in front of Sykes and Sam Bell on the left. Once again, I don't think we've got an alternative. And if Naki's fit, I'd go Conway Naki up front. If he's not fit, I'd go Conway Cornet and see how that goes.
Okay.
And I think defensively, we've been pretty good. We're not conceding loads and loads of goals, but we're only the 18th highest scorers. So we're that, I don't say a draw specialist, but we're the team that's not going to score a lot, and we have to win games by the odd goal. So I'd like to see us become more of a, if you would call it a 3-2 team, rather than a 1-0 or a possibly 2-1 team. And I think we've got to get our best players, available players, on the field. Naki and Tommy play well together when they've been in formations where that's worked before, but not with either of them wide. So let's go over there and have a go, because I think if we play a similar team, I don't think we'll get thrashed, but I don't think we'll get the win either. And I want to go and try and win games. I'd much rather, win one, lose one, draw one, than just sit in there and draw three.
Yeah.
So. That's what I do.
If we were to go over there and win, then the batch of three games, it works out at 6 points if we go there and win, and that's 2 points a game, which is enough to keep us up there challenging. And then, dare I say it, the next two games are games that we bloody well ought to win, being Sheffield Wednesday at home and Cardiff. Yeah,
Dave, how many times have we said that over the years?
I know. Mark, quick thought. I want to ask Dave one question afterwards, because we heard from you, Mark, and obviously Ian on the weekend about Nigel and the general situation at the club. But Mark, any quick thoughts from you on Cardiff away? A 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday is unusual for a start, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, for some reason I thought the game was on a Sunday. Don't know why I did that. I think we're going to be more comfortable playing away. If we don't have the majority of possession, I'll be happy. I think our play lends itself to counter-attacking football, because we got pace in behind, and ordinarily I'd say we could win the game. But with the injuries, with the likes of Sykes having to play right back. And we're struggling now with the centre back role. I don't think King. There's no way King's going to be ready if he's feeling his hamstring. He won't be risked. He don't want a tear, which means he could be out for 2 or 3 months. Yeah. So that means another shuffle around. And I would rather play a specialist centre back there and play Pring left back than have to play Hayden Roberts. I would like to say let's go for 3 points, but who knows?
And let's have Duncan Idahun bingo. It's taken 49 minutes of the podcast because Duncan Idahun could play on that left side as well. So, but he doesn't seem
allegedly been playing very well for the under 21s.
Yeah,
well.
There we go.
Hence why Nigel brought him in, I guess.
We haven't had you on for a few weeks, and there's a lot been happening off the pitch. Nigel's comments, he seems to have sort of rectified it by saying he's had talks this week. The lack of communication from the top. I mean, you're you have a measured response in everything that you do, Dave, but you've been sort of quite subtly critical of the hierarchy. What's your overall take on the financial situation? And does it need to be, not the financial situation, the Nigel situation, does it need to be resolved before we go into the next transfer window?
Ideally, yes. I think, you know, you've probably seen lots of stuff that I've posted on OTIB. You've probably heard me on Radio Bristol on Monday night as well. The problem is, as fans, we're not being communicated to. Or in fact, that's a lie. The only person who's given us any communication is Nigel Pearson. And yeah. I think that's appalling. And I say, you're right. I'm normally quite kind of grey on the football side of things, because I think, you know, football is rarely black and white. But I think on the other stuff, we're making it black and white out of speculation, because none of us know what the hell is going on. We're hearing soundbites from Nigel Pearson. But I think what has really happened over the last few months is contradiction. And if I kind of explain those sequence of events, we've gone into a summer thinking that, you know, comes from Brian Tinney and I can't remember who else, that, you know, we've got a plan A and a plan B. Well, that's been contradicted. We've heard from Steve Lansdowne previously, what football makes, football can spend. Okay, you could qualify that and say football tends to lose money every season, whether you sell players or not. But, you know, let's just kind of take that as a view that he's previously been prepared to offset the losses. And for me, that's what I've always deemed him to be saying, running a sustainable club, that we're not getting ourselves further and further into debt like we were in, you know, losses and fighting FFP like we were under the previous regime. So we've had that kind of contradiction, because now we've sold someone for 25 million. The likelihood is this season we're actually going to make a profit. So where does that fit against the previous comments? Then we've heard him on Guernsey radio or podcast talking about his golf course. But there was a bit in there about, you know, I guess Steve's ego around, you know, I did the Alex Scott deal. Well, yeah, he probably did. He probably signs off on everything over a certain value. So, you know, what's new there? And you know, and that's not, you know, to disparage Phil Alexander as well. You know, if you've got someone bidding 20 million, the owner who puts in X million every year is probably going to sign off on it. So I don't think that was necessary. And then he came out with his crass comments about Nest Egg. He came out with crass comments about Luton, you know, and this is where I kind of get into the view of Steve Lansdowne and the ownership, you know, and that includes John as well, are focused on outcomes. And this is where I do get kind of quite black and white on it. They're not interested in process. They're a bit like a magpie. Oh, there's a new shiny object over there. We want that. They've got no consideration of, you know, how that magpie built his nest. And I think this is, you know, goes back to your Swansea model, your Brighton models, your Brentford models, now Luton models. He's not interested in the fact that it's taken Luton, you know, X years to build that. He's not interested that they've predominantly done that on probably the best recruitment outside of Brentford that we've seen in the EFL. You know, and when we compare it to, you know, our recruitment over years, it's chalk and cheese. We ain't world class, no matter what, you know, Mark Ashton might have said when he was here. So there's lots of things coming here that kind of start to build a picture of we're not being run very well. Or we're certainly not being, you know, run as well as we think we are.
On that basis.
Finish off on that. And then, you know, then when Alex Scott gets sold and you get Phil Alexander coming out, and my view is, and I might be completely wide of the mark, is that Phil Alexander was told what to say and he retrofitted what he said in that Sound of the City to kind of fit a rhetoric of, oh yeah, well, budgets were agreed in March and all that. And I think ultimately that's why he's ended up going, because he's probably disagreed with the way the football club side of things are going. And Nigel Pearson is bearing a brunt. And I think it's pretty awful, if I'm being honest.
Okay, Dave, and on that point, just to pick up on that point, do you think all the things you said about getting us away, he's got the wages down, la 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 la, he's brought youngsters in, you know, in a way that no other manager in recent years has done, do you think he needs to be shown a little bit of respect for what he's done And that is evidenced by something happening before, I'll say, by Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. I did some maths yesterday. Had we carried on spending at the levels we were, we'd have spent 49.3 million more by my estimates. So Nigel Pearson has cut costs, and that's wage bill and amortization, not that other costs, because I don't know what makes up those. 49 million he's spent less in his, and that's estimating what he's going to spend this year. So in his three seasons here, he's also brought in 35 million pounds of transfer revenue as well. You know, I don't know what else he can do. I'm a big fan of Nigel Pearson. Do I think he's perfect? No, I don't. I think there's lots of things that, you know, I would do differently, you'd do differently, the two other guys on the pod would do differently. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're right and he's wrong either, but I think he's just got his hands are being more and more tied behind his back than ever. You know, we actually heard in midweek, probably for the first time, him actually go away from his comment of, you know, I like to work with a small squad. He said, we could probably do with two or three more players in our current state. And I think that's the crux of it, really, is I think he was hoping to keep Alex Scott, whether that's, you know, blind faith or not, I don't know. But I think he fully expected to be able to go and bring some players in to bolster the squad. And I think, you know, we hear lots of stuff around, we'll only buy players if they're better. Well, I think you have to take a little look and say, which players are they trying to be better than? And I think if we look at someone like Harry Cornick, I honestly think he was there to be better than Chris Martin. He wasn't there to be better than Harry Cornick, Antoine Semenyo. Yeah. And you know, we pay 300 grand for the guy. We're all talk about, you know, loans. I'm not against them. I kind of see the pros and cons of them. But if our wage budget is at its max, you can't even bring in a loan. So what, you know, I don't see us doing anything in January, you know, no. Let alone perhaps making Taylor Gardner-Hickman permanent so we can have one more game.
Dave, that's great. I think what you just said over that last 3 or 4 minutes has been, absolutely brilliant. Said, you know, I know I tend to shriek off with my views. Just quick one from you, Ian, before we go, because we do need to wrap it up. You raised your hand. Was there one particular point you wanted to pick up with Dave?
It comes back to the point of on communication. What we need to know is what the strategy is. What was Nigel Pearson's job when he came in? All right. So if Nigel Pearson's job was, look, we're not going to give you any money. We're going to cut the wage bill. Right. You know that. So this is where what you're coming into. So come in with your eyes wide open. If we sell players, you'll only be given a fraction of the money and it'll be this percentage. All right. So if you sell 35 million, you're going to get 10%. That's 3.5 million quid, which I think is about what we've spent roughly. Now, bearing in mind, we've got in the summer I'm talking about, not including the January ones as well, Mometi and Cornick, but like Dave said, they weren't a huge amount of money. So, and on top of it, they're not better than what was already here. So the strategy is that Nigel Pearson's job, all it's been is to keep us in the Championship. Now, if that was it, he succeeded, because everybody seems to want to take credit for cutting this wage bill, from Richard Gould, Parkinson, Steve Lansdowne, John Lansdowne. Who's it down to? Is it Brian Tinian? So no. It's down to whoever sets the budget, and all the budgets are signed off by Stephen Lansdowne, because he's funding it, or he has been funding it. Yeah. Now, I think the big difference, if you look at when we had Mark Ashton, as my dad used to say, spending money like a man with no hands, your budget, he's done all that. He's done Callas. Now, I know all that was all pre-pandemic. So the pandemic thing, right? So, but Mark Ashton has spent. He hasn't done that at Ipswich. He spent a little bit, or he spent a bit more in League One to get the squad together that they've got to get him out of it. But since he's been promoted, he hasn't been allowed to do it.
He's been reined in.
That's the big difference between the owners at Ipswich. And I had this conversation with Ipswich fan the other day. They haven't been delegate and forget. They've been right, Buster, that's how much money you got. How you spend it, we're not going to tell you to buy, what to do. How you spend it is that. That's the budget. Zap. Yeah.
There's been right? a better, and there's I been think... a better control. No, Ian, there's been better control. And his coach, his young coach, comparing Kieran McKenna.
Oh, that's got to, that's got to, if he did it, that's got to be his best ever signing.
That is in my book. All right, Ian, I need to stop now. I've got to think. Look, we can every episode we'll have of FBC until the Pearson situation gets resolved one way or another, whatever that other way may be. It's going to be a point of discussion. We're still, if we'd have won last night, again, fine margins, we'd have been in the playoffs, although I think we might have just been about seventh looking at the league table this morning. But Dave, great to have you on. Ian, you'll be joining me whenever we record the Cardiff Review podcast, probably Sunday morning, might even be Saturday, but we can talk about that offline. Thanks to everybody who's listened, and the number of people that are listening to every episode, absolutely fantastic. You know, it's nudging north of 1,200 for every episode now. And Dave, always good to have you on today. And Mark, who's he's had to go off to a meeting. But everybody, thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back very soon. All the best, everyone. Thanks, guys. Cheers. Bye-bye now.
Cheers, all.
What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red, red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, cheer up. The sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robins are bobbing along. When the red, red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bobbing along.